Members, we're going to get started here. We have a great presentation as well as a bill that we're going to take up today, so we are going to get started. We do not have a quorum yet, so we will officially call it when we have that. But I would like to invite down Cindy Christ, who is board chair for SciMath Minnesota, who's going to give us kind of an introduction of today's presentation, and we will get started. Welcome, Ms. Christ.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Christ. My day job is being system director for P16 collaboration for the Minnesota State Colleges and University System. But I'm here this morning because I also serve as chair of the board of SciMath Minnesota. And I hope all of you recall having at least heard of SciMath. We've had an opportunity, probably annually for several years, to come here before you and share information. And the most recent hearing here was, we think, almost exactly a year ago today. And it was a hearing at which we began to share results with you of the most recent TIMSS study. The acronym TIMSS initially stood for Third International Math and Science Study, because at the time of the first TIMSS, it was the third study. I think it's an acronym that has become well enough known now that it's been maintained, and now the T stands for trends, I think, in mathematics and science studies. So, and you may know that in about 1995, with funding from SciMath, Minnesota participated as a mini nation in TIMSS, and we did the same much more recently, and it's those more recent results from 2003. I should have double-checked all these dates before I came up. 2007. The analysis of those 2007 results are what we presented, what we've been presenting most recently. So our last policymaker briefing focused specifically or more in more depth on the math results, and most of what Dr. Bill Schmidt from Michigan State University will be sharing with you today is some more in-depth analysis of the science results. And then after Dr. Schmidt speaks, we thought we'd like to start bringing the story back home a little bit. And so one of our own Minnesota teachers, Dr. Natalie Rasmussen, who's a chemistry teacher from the Minneapolis Public Schools, will be joining us to talk a little bit about what she's done in her classroom and her perceptions and some ideas about closing the achievement gap in science. So science is the primary focus of what we'll be presenting to you this morning. And we're very grateful for this opportunity. We hope that what we'll, the information we'll provide today will help you this session and in the future as you're making the important policy decisions that you need to make in this Ed Policy and Oversight Committee.
Great, thank you. And now we'll call down Dr. Schmidt. Welcome, Dr. Schmidt. If you would just state your name for the record, and we look forward to your presentation.
Thank you. Bill Schmidt from Michigan State University. We may be competitors on the Big Ten basketball field at the moment, but this, what I want to bring to you today, is an issue that specific to Minnesota, but it's also a more general issue in the nation as a whole. I appreciate the opportunity to again brief you, only this time on the science results. The story is more complicated here than it was with the mathematics. The mathematics story was really quite straightforward. It was congratulatory. If you will recall, I said basically that you had improved, you had outstripped the whole of the United States in your improvement over those 12 years, and you had a great deal to be proud of and to look forward to, as the fourth graders made huge gains, and then the eighth graders were pointed in the right direction. The science story, I'll give you the bottom line first so you have a sense for what I show you that follows. The story is sort of it's a harder one to tell because on the surface it looks like things are fine until you dig beneath the surface and you find what I think is a weakness in the underlying structure, so that staying on top of where you are in science is going to be difficult with the path that you are now moving on to. So it's a different story in terms of this one is more complicated and it has more nuance to it. This slide, this presentation is for a longer one later in the day, so I'm just going to skip through this. But this one just says what I said 2 moments ago about the mathematics and in the eighth grade And one of the things that was so critical there is that the teachers really changed in response to the standards that had been established in 2003. So that the state standards really guided the system, and the teachers changed in response to it and focused their instruction around the things that are really important, leaving the things that before in 1995 had sort of dominated. It's that brownish-looking area behind you, which is about a 25% of the whole school year, was essentially a collection of things that really didn't make any sense to have in the curriculum anyway. And if you'll notice, in 2007, that becomes that little sliver. It disappeared. And that, I think, was greatly related to the improved performance of the Minnesota students, putting them up just beneath the top level of country performance. But the point here is to move to the science. At fourth grade, you can see that you're in a middle set, outperforming all the countries that are in sort of that blue. But the Singapore and Massachusetts also participated as a state, and they were simply the top achievers. And you're in the middle sort of pack, not quite at the top level of achievement. And, you know, it's interesting, you might say, well, that if you just count, that's like, what, about the fifth position, it looks pretty good. But you have to look at the score. It's 551. The score of the top ones are about 570, 580. That's a large difference. That's, you know, over a third of a standard deviation difference. That's a major move to get that kind of improvement. So, at one level, you can say, geez, things aren't bad for the fourth graders. If you look at the 95 against the 2007, you can see that you were way up there in 95. In fact, you had the top score with Japan. But now in the new version, you have, again, you're still up at a high score, but Singapore and others are simply much higher. And that's why, you know, if I stopped here, you'd say, well, everything looks good. We're doing about as well as we did in 1995, and we're up near the top in the performance by our fourth graders. But as I said, I think the story is a little bit more complicated as you go further. This is just to say that the 2005 NAEP, the National Assessment, continues to show Minnesota way up there in terms of other states. The 2007 grade 8 science, to move to that, which is shows again here a little bit more of a situation of Minnesota's being again outperforming the United States, but not performing in that top tier of countries where the state of Massachusetts finds itself. But again, it's not a bad story. It's not that you're doing very poorly like you were in the 1995 in mathematics. In 2007, the performance is reasonable. Now, don't be misled by the very large number of countries in that sort of blue area. Those are the ones that Minnesota statistically significantly outperforms, and it looks like most of the world. But look carefully at some of the countries in that blue. These are not exactly this nation's competitors. There's a lot of developing countries in there. The countries that have now joined the TIMSS study, many of which come from the third world and are now part of this. So it looks like the performance is much better than it is when you consider, you have to look very carefully at which countries you're comparing yourself to. The comparison of 95 to 07 for the grade 8 science, again, shows somewhat of a similar story, that you're not that far off the top, but you're not near the, you're at not at the top performance. So in sum, what I'm saying is what I said to you a moment ago, that if you could stop here, you might say, well, things aren't that bad. They are not similarly also that good in the sense that you're performing much closer to the top tier of countries, but it's not a bad performance, and it's about consistent with what you were doing 12 years ago. Well, actually more than 12 years now, since it's now, 2010. So, but the story in terms of the testing is somewhat of a consistent pattern. But I think one needs to look at this more carefully to get a better sense of it. This just shows the NAEP results, a similar pattern that before. And what you need to do, and I'll skip over these to the summary of that, those couple slides, you need to look specifically at areas within science to see and understand what the performance looks like. And this little scale, I think, tells part of the story at fourth grade. If you look at the green, this is where Minnesota is outperforming the United States. And the gray area is where the performance is somewhat equivalent. And what you see here is in 1995, you were virtually outperforming the U.S. in every one of these areas of science at the fourth grade. Now you go to 2007 and you've slipped. You are now essentially performing at or and around the U.S.'s performance. Now, it's not particularly, this sounds unpatriotic, but it's not particularly good to be performing like the rest of the United States, because we know from all these international comparisons, we don't compete, we don't compare very well with the other countries of the world. So this is not a good thing necessarily. You were above that performance, inching your way, if you will, in 95 toward the top tier, and now at fourth grade you've slipped. Now, one of the things that one has to take into consideration here is that schools are pressed pretty hard in terms of the annual yearly progress for the No Child Left Behind to perform well in what? Reading and mathematics. And there could be some conjecture that one of the reasons behind this is that those schools now have cut back on the amount of science instruction in those early grades. And that's entirely a possibility. We don't have any data to confirm that, but that certainly could be one conjecture as to why this slippage. But I think this is what I'm trying to say to you. If you look at this, and then you look at those results for 2007, you have to say, well, what's the pathway? What's the trajectory look like? And this suggests that it may not be going in the right direction. And that's what I think is the concern that Minnesota ought to think about in terms of these results in science. That's why it's a different story. In math, the trajectory seems to be going upward. In this case, it seems to be going somewhat in a downward trend. And you look at this, these are the areas that sort of taking a metric. You know, it's always these normative comparisons, just say how you compare to somebody else. There's another absolute way and say, well, kids ought to know this stuff, no matter what any other country or any other state does. And we could set those criteria something like, well, if you get, you know, teachers do this in school, you know, 80% is an A or 90% is an A. So we just took a fairly reasonable one and said if you score and get more than 75% correct in a given area, that shows pretty good performance. The rest are sort of not so good. Well, if you look at 95, there were four areas in which you were topping out, and now that sort of seemingly has changed. So there's a slippage here. Even though the performance isn't that different on average overall, the performance, when you start looking at specific areas, does show some drop. And things like scientific processes and plants and animals, I think, would be areas you would want in fourth grade to have a focus on if you look internationally. And this is where the areas that you've slipped in from 95 to 2007. The eighth grade, the story is a little different. It's sort of it's about the same. If you look at this slide, it's pretty much there's not really a lot of change there. It looks pretty much like it did in 1995 at the eighth grade level. The reason I suggested the hypothesis earlier about slippage of time is in the middle grades, that doesn't happen because there's a formal hour that's science, a period, that kids go to science instruction. So it's likely that there's been no slippage in coverage with respect to science that would suggest similarly. But here you see a real part of the story. Both in 95 and 2007, there were no outstanding performance areas in science. And what you see is less than 50% correct, which is really a problem area. There are a lot of topics there that the state's kids are not doing particularly well on, and new ones have been added that before you were doing somewhat better on. Now, if you look at the topics listed in those categories, you have one common element to it. It's about physics. It's about the physical world. It's about the way the world is moving. When you look at computers, when you look at IT jobs, when you look at the whole world of energy and alternative energy sources, what do you need to know if you're going to move into those areas with jobs and so forth? You need to understand matter, physical changes, chemical changes. You need to understand the structure of matter, energy and energy transformations. That's what's there. There's the weakness in the performance of the Minnesota students. And that does not particularly bode well, again, looking to the future. So, again, I remind you, if you look at the overall score, you might be satiated and think things are okay. But if you look underneath it, and hence the title that I chose, Beneath the Surface, it's really a different story. It's a story that I think suggests that you have to be careful, because you may not be able to maintain the position, yet alone improve your relative position, with the trajectory that seems to be underlying these data. And I think here, this starts to tell another story, that this was true in mathematics as well. And this is, I think, one of the major messages I want to leave you with. And that is that you have a problem, just like much of the rest of the nation. But it's a serious problem. You are leaving behind a large segment of your population. You are leaving behind those kids who most need to benefit by the educational system. Those kids who, by family background, by social class, by ethnicity, are essentially the ones who mostly need school in order to succeed, in order to not become a burden on society, but to become a contributing part of society. They're the ones whose performance is particularly low when you compare it to the kids at the other levels of poverty. This is the free and reduced lunch metric, which is this, you know, the amount of poverty in the schools. And the pattern here is from the left, which are those schools in which there is very little poverty, to those schools on the far right in which you find a large amount of poverty. And the line gives you the trajectory of the gap between those various, I guess we had five groups here. And you can see, I'm not going to go each one of these. These are fourth grade topics. And it's pretty serious. It's a downward trend. It's almost a straight line. So that if you're simply in a school that a lower social class, you simply are going to end up scoring a certain constant amount as you go down the various groupings. I mean, it's a straight line with a couple bends. Here is an interesting phenomenon that also occurred in, this is eighth grade, where you have a flattening, so that somehow you've managed to across the first four social class groupings, there's a bit of a constancy. But then there's this big drop when you go to the kids that are the most immersed in poverty. And so it's a different pattern for biology at eighth grade. But then again, it has a similar pattern in other areas. But here's another one where you see this sort of flattening across the first four areas. This really makes a challenge for the state, because it's very clear that you have a large achievement gap. And it varies depending on the nature of the topic as to how that gap looks across different topics.
We do have a question. Before we take the question, I'd like to officially call us to order. We are at quorum. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I was just curious. I'm not terribly surprised by these results, having, you know, paid attention for the last couple of years, but I guess I'm wondering, what about other countries? Do they show a similar pattern with their children of poverty as compared to ours, or is this common across cultures and countries?
Well, it is somewhat common, yes. I mean, clearly social class plays a role in there, and schools can work very hard to eliminate it, but it doesn't ever completely eliminate. There's a correlation between SES and achievement in all the countries. The correlation is higher here, and I think that's the difference. And I'll tell you what I think is, and this is also based on data, the reason for that is that in those countries, essentially they have a national set of standards, which then dictates to the system that no matter how rich or poor the kids are, they are basically entitled to a certain coverage of material in certain amounts. In the United States, this is not the case. And in Minnesota, you have standards, but as I understand it, there's no necessarily force that makes all the districts within the state, and you got about 600, as I understand it, do exactly the same thing. So I think you'll see in a few moments that one of the compelling things here is that there's another kind of gap. It's called a curriculum gap, that the kids that are doing the poorest are getting something different in school than the kids in the more wealthy suburbs. And I think that's the part where public policy can dictate. You will never obliterate social class, but you can lessen its impact. And other countries do that.
Another question, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Walker, Minnesota. Welcome to our committee. A quick question on this particular set of graphs. Do you have this data available over time so we're able to compare? I take it that the graphs that we just looked at in terms of the SES are the most current 2007 data reports. Do you have comparisons with a decade ago relative to this subgroup of students? And then do you have that? Is that available per state? Do you have information to look at specifically for Minnesota?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm not sure. But I believe that probably what is what it would take to do that for 95 is available. I don't think we've done that. The instinct of doing, the insight of doing this occurred more in terms of this particular set. But I think we could go back and look at that, and I think maybe we should do that, Mike, is to take a look at 95 and see if there's a trend or whether that was the same situation back in 12 years ago.
And then, Mr. Chair, Mr. Schmidt, just an observation. So in both of these content areas, over time, you see a ratcheting down overall in the aggregate of Minnesota outcomes. But you also see that with the United States in general. Is there, it would lead one to conclude that there may be, because we have different standards and, you know, across the states, we have different instructional approaches, but nonetheless, it would lead one to conclude that there may be some kind of deep sociological forces at play here that are able to transcend beyond standards, different standards across states. That, and I'm jumping to a big conclusion, but you know, that have a sort of a downward effect, regardless of what state you're at. Is that too big a conclusion? Is there a deep sociological kind of thing that's happening in our nation relative to the competencies of these two content areas?
Dr. Schmidt,
that's a big question.
Yeah.
With a big set of ideas behind. I can only tell you what I would conjecture, based on some data, but also I have to go beyond the data to sort of answer your question. I think there are exceptions within the United States and in other countries which suggest that this doesn't have to be the way that it is. I do think, though, that you're tapping into the fact that there appears to be a deeper sociological phenomenon, that schooling is not just thought of as being so important right now in our country, and whether that's changed over time, I'm not sure, but I think there is that bigger problem in terms of parents and their involvement and their encouragement and so forth. And we have some data on that that shows that I don't have time data, trend data, but most recently that there are some problems there in terms of engagement and understanding the system and pushing it harder. So it's probably a combination of both things. But I think this doesn't have to be. And the next set of slides, I think, tells you why I believe it doesn't have to be.
Well, and Mr. Chair, one final comment, again, a big thought here, but one of the things that has changed over the last 10 years and has been inexorably almost changing has been the changed nature of the SES status of American students. We've had a rise in poverty of young Americans, of young Americans, and we've also had a great diversification of our student population base, both due to the growth of kids of color, many who are in low-income communities, but also the growth of immigrant students, many who also come with very limited social capital, at least in the first generation or two. Again, a conjecture, but it reminds us that nothing. The field isn't static. You know, there are a number of things that are changing here.
Yeah, this is true. Well, let me give you a different. Not that I disagree with the notion of the social class having an impact in its changing over time nature, but there's another issue that I think is that we have a lot of data on, and basically that shows that kids learn what they're given opportunities to learn. It's a very simple principle. It's almost obvious, but it's interesting that we in the social sciences have had to do a lot of research to establish it, because a lot of people don't want to believe that, and so you know, sometimes you have to prove the obvious, and we've done that now overwhelmingly, that there's clear evidence that across nations, within the United States, across states, within the United States, within a state, across districts, that there are different opportunities. We do not have common standards. Minnesota and the country right now are working on a set of common standards, but we don't have them. So there's this enormous variation in what children study, and that variation, you need to understand. Yeah, I'm writing a book about this right now. It varies so much that, in fact, two children in the same school of almost identical social class and all those other characteristics, if one has Miss Jones and the other one has Miss Sally, basically they're not going to necessarily have the same opportunities. And what we see in the Minnesota data is that point very clearly. These are the characteristics we look for in the curriculum. And what you see here is the current, not the current, excuse me, because you just revised this, but these were the Minnesota standards that were in existence about 2004, I guess, is actually when it came in. And these were the ones that would have guided the system when these kids took this test in 2007. And the point I want to make to you here is, can you see that? Yeah, the greenish area is where the top achieving countries would have dots. They would not have any dots in all the rest of those areas. So what you have here, in my judgment, is a chaotic system of coverage of science. It flips around, it skips around, it has no pattern to it, and it has lots of holes. And so basically the system as a whole is not particularly well guided by a set of standards like this. When you recognize that the green area you see, if I was just showing you the top performing countries, you would see dots solidly in all those green areas and nothing in the rest of the area. Put simply, the Minnesota standards in science seem to introduce topics before their time. That's a very common pattern here. They introduce them early on when they're introducing it in a very simple way, and then they never get to the real coverage of them in the middle grades when the topic is covered in a more detailed theoretical way. Hence the reason for that very poor performance in the physical science area. So kids early on get told there's an atom when they have no idea that there's anything that could be that small. But then when they get to the middle grades and they have a chance to really understand those ideas, they're not covered anymore. So they get a very shallow coverage of these things, which gets them by. But then when they really need it to go on and move into the knowledge they need ultimately, it's not there.
We do have a question, Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Schmidt, it was so good to hear you again. I heard you at the Science Museum earlier this year, and this is very interesting data. Last year, we really worked hard at trying to understand why our juniors did not pass the math graduation test, and we were really struggling with that. Much of the data that we were given at that time showed that with the new math standards, what the new methodology is to be able to introduce concepts early on and drill deeply with those concepts, and that we're seeing a lot of improvement in fourth and eighth grade scores. Part of my concern is that as we are adopting these standards and we're applying testing to older grades that have not had this earlier foundational growth, that I feel it skews the data. Do you have any feelings about that? Is that something that you have looked at as new standards are introduced on a statewide level?
Dr. Schmidt.
If I understand your question, there is a problem, because if you introduce new standards, I mean, when you change when you change and get more rigorous standards throughout the system, that presupposes the earlier standards would have been covered in that same depth that now the new standards call for. So you always have an implementation problem where the two things get out of sync. So you will have some kids coming up that have not had that serious foundation. And mathematics is very hierarchical. It's very building. And if you don't build logically, you will not get to the point. You can't leave gaps. That's why that slide I just showed you is worrisome. Gaps, you might say, well, they could take it later. Well, no. If at point X, you need this understanding in order to get to point Y's topics, and you don't do it, you go to Y and you really have a little chance of understanding it. Now, who's going to get it? The brighter kids. But that's not what schooling policy should be about. It should be for all kids. And so you have these gaps, yes. And you have to live with them till the whole system gets more on sync. But I think from the math side, from what the data would show, is that in 2007, where would they be now? 3 years later, that would be about seventh grade, right? They're coming up with a foundation you ought to be able to capitalize on. That's the hope. And so, yeah, there are going to be mismatches at certain points. To the opportunity side of it, here's fourth grade in 95 and 2007. This is what the teachers tell us they teach. There's a lot of, you seem in Minnesota, I mean somewhat humorously, you seem to be really preoccupied with earth science. You do more of it now even than you did in 1995, and you cut back on the amount of biology that you cover in fourth grade. So these are shifts that I don't know exactly what they mean, but I think that they're seriously worth thinking about as to what the nature of there's a shift in what you're covering. I can show you this. That's a bit out of sync with the test, where biology is a dominant aspect of it, and you've cut back on your biology coverage. Here's the social gap business that I was talking about. here at fourth grade, it's there's less biology, especially in the low SES schools, going on, and correspondingly more earth science. So there's a trade-off. Now, they're supposedly under the same standards. This is the point I was making earlier. Yeah, you do have state standards, but the schools are not necessarily doing exactly what they're told to do. And there's a difference from the low SES schools to the high SES schools in how they interpret those standards and what they do with it. And those gaps, I mean, keep in mind, that doesn't look like very much on a pie diagram, but, you know, the difference of weeks of instruction is a major difference. So you have to be careful in terms of translating this back into the actual number of hours of instruction that occurs in these areas or not. Here's a summary of it. The higher SES groups get more biology by about 4 weeks. That's a lot. 4 weeks is an enormous amount of instructional time for kids. And correspondingly, the quid pro quo is they get more earth science in the lower social class things. Now, earth science is okay, but, you know, I sort of, when I choose to be humorous about this, I say that the U.S. focuses on rocks, and that's not what geology is all about, earth science. Now, I don't know further exactly what they're doing in those classes, but this could be that kind of a trade-off. Biology is a little bit more complicated if you simply teach different types of rocks. Now, if you teach real earth science, it could be just as complicated. But my hunch is this is a trade-off in complexity. And so you deal with the earth science because the kids can have more fun naming different rocks and things of that sort. Let me just skip ahead. In eighth grade, this is what happens. And again, look at the shift from 95. Earth science reigns. It's almost three-fourths on average, three-fourths of the school year. And the other areas get little slivers. That, I think, is an important issue for the state to think about. They had a lot more earth science at fourth grade, and they have a lot more at eighth grade. If that's what you want them to have, that's fine. But I think I would suggest to you that you want to think about that little sliver over there, the yellow one and the one sort of orange one. That's physics and chemistry. That's what you need in a more technologically oriented economy. There is not much of anything in those areas in the 2007. This is why I suggest to you looking beneath the surface tells a different story than the overall test result would suggest. Well, everything's fine. We should just rest on our laurels and keep moving. I don't think anybody should rest on their laurels. The world keeps moving. You can bet that these other countries are looking at these same data and trying to think about not just the competition of doing this test and claiming to be higher, but in what the implications are for jobs, for the economy, for the way the world runs itself right now.
Question from Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So is there any breakdown in that earth science category as to what the components of earth science are? My own observation from my kids is that it's becoming heavily oriented towards environmental issues as compared to maybe even what you mentioned, the study of rocks. Do you have any sense of how that slice is broke down?
I could do that for you. I don't have it off the top of my head. But I do know that, yes, a large part of it is ecosystems and things of that sort. I can tell you this, a lot of it is not. You know, earth science is the really serious study about how the earth works. The plate tectonics and all of the things that really are important to understanding what's going on, tsunamis and all those things, that's not what it is. It's more of the descriptive type stuff, including the environment.
And Dr. Schmidt, if there's anything else that you'd like to kind of conclude your presentation, as we would like to bring Dr. Natalie Rasmussen up as well.
Okay, if I can just take 2 more minutes to say the same thing, to show you the same thing at eighth grade, and you can see here the low SES and the high SES and the difference. Biology seems to be the trade-off at the eighth grade in terms of what kids get in the lower SES schools as contrasted with more chemistry, physics, and things of that sort. So once again, there's a difference. You know, there are achievement gaps. You saw those earlier. There are also gaps that come as a part of the curriculum itself. These children are not getting the same opportunities, those in the lower social class schools and those in the higher social class schools. This is not an equitable system. And this summarizes it. They get about 11 weeks more of biology in contrast to 4 weeks of other topics, which probably are more advanced topics, building and looking across genetics and things of that sort, plus more physics. So you've got a very inequitable system in terms of opportunity. Those inequalities and opportunity translate into what kids know. You need to be rest assured we have enough data to say that unequivocally, so that if you teach them different things, they will know different things. And if they take a test, they will then simply do performances that will be different, and you will end up with gaps. And so, yes, social class does make a difference, but other countries work very hard through common expectations to assure all kids common opportunities to give them a shot at life. In our country, we simply exacerbate the social class gaps by simply making curriculum gaps along the system. And I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Last question here from Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious about, you've talked about the curriculum and you've talked about, you know, what the students learn. Have you any data on the differences in majors and licensure, or the licensure of teachers in their major area, and particularly in, you're talking about low economic as well as just generally in the middle school. Is there a difference in the licensure in high-performing and low-performing schools?
Dr. Schmidt? I cannot answer your question for Minnesota. I don't have those data. I do have national data and data from other sources. And I can tell you that in general, that is the problem, that the teachers, not only is the curriculum, that resource, less for those kids, but the teachers who teach it also are ones who have less years of experience, who tend not to have the appropriate degrees to teach what they're supposed to teach. So they get a double shot, a negative shot. They simply end up with a curriculum that doesn't match what they need, what they should have, and they get teachers who really are not that adept and that knowledgeable to teach that. And that's true nationally. So I suspect it would be true in Minnesota, although I don't have any data to speak to that directly. And when you look in it, we're doing an international study right now of teachers' preparation. And I can tell you the study is in mathematics. The difference between what those teachers that would teach in those top-performing countries whose kids do really well, what they take as in terms of their preparation in the subject matter is much deeper than what we teach in this country expect of our teacher preparation. And you, just a 30-second commercial here, probably sometime around May or June, we will release the results from a 20-country study which shows what the preparation of teachers around the world looks like, both for elementary, for middle school, and high school. And you'll be quite surprised by those results. I tell you them, but I had to guarantee my firstborn by not saying what we now know. So I can't really tell you anything, but I will tell you this. You will just be blown away by what those results show. And that's the next policy lever I think one has to look at. It's a very insightful question.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Schmidt, then related to that, could you comment on the criteria in the Race to the Top application? There's one portion in Turning Around Struggling Schools that says one of the things we need to look at is making sure the best teachers are in the most challenging schools. And then another part of the application relates to alternative paths to teacher licensure and makes it easier for teachers who may not have all that qualification and the younger teachers to be able to teach.
That's another big question. Let me take the second part first. I think that what we see when we look at these other countries is that none of those countries, start the sentence over again. When you look at these alternative programs, we're going to study those as a part of this work that we're doing, but they're so hard to even find and define that it's really difficult to find them and study them. But I can tell you this, you know, one of the things that goes on in some of those is there is less coursework of this sort or that sort. Some suggest they don't need any education courses, psychology courses. When you look internationally with the study we've already done on 6 countries, there is no country that prepares its teachers without a solid background in both the subject matter and pedagogy. And I think we have to be very careful when we go these alternative route things, that we don't pretend that all they need is the subject matter knowledge. That's another disaster simply waiting to happen. And when you look internationally, you just don't find this anywhere. So I think there's a lesson there that we ought to know right from the beginning, that that's really a dumb idea that will simply fail and cause more uproar and confusion in the classroom than you can possibly imagine. I forgot the first part of your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Schmidt, the first part was turning around struggling schools and trying to have a more equitable distribution of the really qualified, successful teachers.
Instead of giving you my opinion, I'll give you a piece of data. In these other countries, the policy, it's actually surprising. In Germany, for example, a comparable country to us in many ways, the teachers are assigned to certain schools. They are given an assignment. You don't choose. You don't get out of school and then say, I want to go to this place or that place. You're simply given an assignment as to where you go to teach. And the point is that in many of these countries, that's how they deal with the problem schools, is they simply assign some of their best teachers to teach at those schools. Now, that will never happen in this country. But it does tell us something that, in fact, probably perhaps by inducement of increased bonuses, salaries, that we need to work at that, because other countries recognize this. In fact, in the Netherlands, the resource allocation to the local school is determined by the poverty and the difficulty of instruction, meaning more money goes to those schools in ways to get better teachers and make sure the curriculum is taught.
I think it's great. I think it kind of adds to the conversation that Dr. Rasmussen will be able to bring down. So we'll bring her to the front here, have her kind of address the closing of the achievement gap, and then if there are some other questions for Dr. Schmidt or Dr. Rasmussen, we'll be able to address those. Welcome, Dr. Rasmussen. Please state your name, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you. My name is Natalie Rasmussen, and I'm a chemistry teacher at North High School in Minneapolis. And I guess I'm here to bring the human perspective, what actually goes on in a classroom. This is the start of my 20th year in education, and it's been a good ride. It's been a really good ride. When I look at these data, when I look at these charts and these graphs, they echo what I see on a daily basis. My school is a low-performing school. My school has over 80% free and reduced lunch. We have your typical inner-city problems. We have anything from homelessness to many teenage pregnancies to disrupted family life, you name it. We have a large ELL population, several languages represented. We have a large special ed population. We have a lot, and in that special ed, there's a huge EBD population, emotional and behavioral disorder. Yet still we are held to the same standards that everyone else is. And I find that to be a challenge. I enjoy it. I go to school every day, trying to instill in these kids. It doesn't matter where you come from. You have no choice over your parentage. You didn't get to choose your parents. You didn't get to choose your the home and the finances you were born into, okay? But you do get to choose where you end up. And I joke with my kids quite a bit. I tell them I have a little disability, a little genetic disability, and that in my DNA, that little gene for pity is missing. It's missing. So I don't know if that gets me a parking space or what. But we have a good time, love them dearly, but please, I let them know, please know that if you see a stylish pair of size 9 stuck up in your behind, just know that it's put there with love, okay? You need to perform. Because people all over, and I will let you know, I'm very, very, those who know me know that I'm just very direct, very blunt, and I just say it. I really was not schooled on being politically correct, and I, frankly, it just hasn't served me, so I just don't bother, okay? And I basically tell the kids, why is it that there's a whole bunch of white people sitting up someplace with charts and graphs, wringing their hands over the achievement gap, when in fact you are the only ones that can do something about it? Why? And then the room sounds something like this afterwards. Okay. Now, after seeing Dr. Schmidt's PowerPoint, which, by the way, is also available on the SciMathMin website if you want to see it in color, I agree with many of the points. He talked about, what is this big deal about earth science? And I've said that for years. What is the big deal about earth science? I'm licensed to teach biology, chemistry, physics, and earth science. Our standards in Minneapolis, in Minnesota right now, there is this huge emphasis on earth science. And this is not to slam the earth science lovers, okay? But bottom line, if you really want to be competitive for jobs, he's absolutely right. The chemistry and the physics, okay? Number two, the biology, okay? Huge biomedical industry in this state. You've got to have it. Now, our grad standards say that children must have a year of biology, okay, to graduate. They need 3 years of science, all right? We push for four. I don't understand the earth science thing at all, because they don't test for it, and the colleges and universities aren't necessarily asking for it. They're looking at the chemistry and physics because they want to see that math thing. Now, there's a whole lot of people that come through, and it's almost perfectly socially acceptable to say, well, I'm not good at math. And that's okay to say. And people stick around, that's all right, I sucked at math too. You know? Why is that okay to say that? We wouldn't say that about reading. When I think about things that might involve a shift in policy, I think of these lower grades. Yes, there's a huge push. Elementary school teachers, they get the beat down about math and reading, math and reading, math and reading. Yeah, that's great. And they should. Kids need to know how to read, they need to know how to write, they need to know how to compute, no doubt. But when science is concerned, I feel that that there needs to be kind of a wraparound approach. I tease my math colleagues. I let them know that science is the thing, and particularly the physical sciences, chemistry and physics, are the things that even make math worth it. Okay. The kids that come into my classes, some of them, and I teach right now this year, I have three preps. I have an advanced placement chemistry. I have three classes of general chemistry, and I have one class of special ed science. And all of them are held to the same behavioral standards. And I think when you start seeing an achievement gap, it's not because poor kids are dumb. It's not because poor kids' parents don't care about their education. They really do. And you will hear them be ever so honest. Boy, you need to get some education. You don't want to end up like me. You don't want to do what I'm doing. You need to get to school. There are other challenges, okay? For example, I'll have kids miss school all the time. Younger brother and sister, sick. They had to stay home. Parents cannot afford daycare. The school is the daycare. Parents still have to work, okay? When I think of gaps, it's largely along the lines of attendance, things that would inhibit kids from coming to school. Now, some of that is family pressure. Some of that is just plain stupid poor choices. I'm going to go hang out. I'm going to skip. Now, if I were going to address that, I see in the past they've tried to have real tough requirements, tougher tests. People were wondering, well, why weren't juniors passing the math test a while ago? I don't necessarily think a tougher test is the answer. And right now, that they've made it now that you can, if you fail the test, then you have three chances to take it, and then you take a class. Now, in lieu of passing the test? That's what it is now, right? Yes? That's what I'm hearing.
Sort of.
Sort of? Okay. And the kids have figured that out, so they go there for their test. They're in and out of the test in 5 minutes. They bubble through anything like this. Great. I only need to do is fail it two more times, and then I'll take my little class and get that out of the way. That's the way they're circumventing this. Okay? It serves no one. I'm all for having concrete standards for everyone. Not impossible standards, but concrete standards. And the kids need to pass these tests. And I just have to ask, and this is just, I'm just going to put it out there. You know, if we're talking about achievement gap, and I've done a lot of study on the achievement gap, it's a passion of mine. It bothers me. I look at all the charts and graphs, and I say to the kids, what the heck? Why are we always on the bottom? What's up with that? I'm sick of this. And you give, every time you guys mess up, all you do is arm the racists. That's all you do. That's what you do. You arm them with data that says that we are somehow inherently less than. And that's your fault. And the kids own it. They do own it. I said, why when we look at charts and graphs of, we can just pull them up online and I show them on the screen, the kids out in Wayzata, the kids in Edina, why are they passing the test? Do they just grow them smarter up there? What? Do they just get the smart water to drink? Why are they passing the test? And the kids will say, well, they're serious about their education. And well, then why aren't you? Why aren't you? Everyone is bending over backwards to make sure you succeed. You need to step up. And they own it. And when they actually do step up, oh, just the pride. Just the pride that they have. Now, look what I did. And these are huge kids. These are 16, 17, 18-year-old huge children. I don't know what they put in the Happy Meals, why they're so large. But I send home little postcards. They're sad. I get them at the little dollar store. Something you'd send a kindergartner, you know, great job, and I mail it to their house. And they put them up on the refrigerator, or they bring them to school. Look what I got. Look what I got. Yeah, did you get one of these? I got one of these. Okay? Great job. Excellent work. I think when we lower standards, we rob children of the dignity that is only gained through hard work and accomplishment. If I were going to address the lower SES groups, I would look particularly at study skills, concrete study skills. It's not necessarily an achievement gap. Oftentimes, it's a study skill gap, okay? Maybe they don't have a computer at home. Well, what? People weren't learning before the advent of computers? That's not an excuse. I also think tougher requirements, not necessarily tougher tests, but tougher requirements. When I think of requirements, graduation requirements, why, and this is, I'm just going to put it out there, why are we so married to this get out of school in 4 years? Why are we so married to this agrarian calendar? You know? Last I heard, the kids in North Minneapolis are not trying to bring in the crops. Okay? There's really no need for us to be so bent on that. If they don't graduate in 4 years, is that the end of the world? Okay? When I think about my undergrad, I went to the University of Minnesota for my undergrad degree. I did not finish in 4 years. Okay? I played sports and I worked. It took me 5.5 years to get through that system. Okay? So now, is my degree worth less? Am I less of a person? Am I less smart? No. It just took me longer. So what? So what? And if these kids, some of them have to learn how to do life. Some of them have unique challenges. And I think it is legal for them to have a free public education at the high school secondary level until age 21. So if you have a certain number of credits and it takes you a little bit longer, come on. We have parents in the room, do we? Parents? Okay. They have the little guidelines that say, oh, your kids should get teeth at a certain age or should walk at a certain age. Well, if they don't walk at the certain age, what, are they just a waste of life now? It makes no sense to me. Kids mature at different rates. Some are quicker. You see a lot of our kids going through PSEO. They're done with high school in 3 years. I need to go to college. That's what they need. Good for them. Some need extra time. That's fine, too. We're trying to stuff all of this into a four-year curriculum, and what happens is the kids, they realize, yes, they've messed up along the way. Yes, maybe there was a family problem that contributed to that. But because when they're not on track to graduate on time, they feel, well, what's the use? What's the use? I guess I am a failure. And there is something, and I'll just put this out there too. There are the voices that people hear, and everyone has voices. Everyone does, but there are voices that are unique to people of color. When you don't see yourself represented in positions of power, when you don't see yourself represented in accomplishment and achievement, so when things get hard, the voices get a little bit louder, and you think, well, maybe I'm not supposed to be here. Maybe this is not for me. And you kind of start rationalizing why it's okay to fail instead of pushing through. And if you don't have someone to push you through and counteract those voices, it's real easy to give up. It's real easy to give up. So I'm all about pushing harder. I just wonder about some of our timetables, if they might not be artificial.
We do have a question over here, Representative Demmer. Okay. Go ahead. He said he'll wait till you're finished.
No, I'll take the question.
Finish.
Okay. The last little thing I wanted to say is when it comes to teacher preparation, I think you have to multitask. I know the way our schools are set up, you have first hour math, second hour English, third hour, and you go through. And that's fine. That's fine. I guess it's fine. But if I look at in the younger grades, the elementary years, where you would have one teacher responsible for introducing reading and math and social studies and science to these kids, they have a wonderful opportunity that they have those kids all year long, and they have them in that class all day. And they're flexible, their schedule's a bit more flexible. For me, I have 55 minutes to get it done. 55 minutes. There's a lot of wraparound that you could do to integrate math, science, reading, and social studies on a daily basis on based around a project, based around a thought, instead of standalones. Because if kids do not see the integration that all of this is all related, I do math, but I don't do English. I like to read, but I don't like to write. It's all the same thing. You're creating an educated person. It's all the same thing, and you have to be able to look at that. And the kids have got to understand that that's what it is. These are not disparate pieces of information. That it's not a salad bar where you get to pick and choose what you like. Yes, we have strengths and weaknesses in any given area, but they need to be able to see that all of this is going to ultimately benefit them and be interesting and be fun. Okay, I'm done now.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Dr. Rasmussen, the reason I didn't want to interrupt you is because I really don't have a question. I just have a comment. As we make policy here and try to do what, and we all do, Republicans, Democrats, we're trying to do what we think is right for kids, what's right for the state of Minnesota. Just listening to you, I think as we do this and as we get into the different things we work on, I think it would probably do us all good to have you come back about every few weeks and get the same talk. And I think it would maybe keep us in perspective. And I just want to thank you for what you're doing for kids. And for me here today.
Thank you very much.
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Rasmussen. What a pleasure to have you here in our committee. I am so always impressed with people who say they are AP teachers and also working with students who are in other performance groups. And there are several of us around this table who are AP teachers as well. So I understand perfectly what you bring to those students who are not usually in your AP classes. You know, Representative Dietrich and I had the opportunity to travel to Arkansas a couple of years ago. We visited Little Rock High School, and Arkansas had one of the lowest achievement gaps in the nation, and they have really moved out of that because their state legislature went to an investment in AP training all the way from high school down into the elementary grades so that children were getting pre-AP classes with a strong vertical alignment into the upper grades. In our school district where I teach, there's a big emphasis on sending our teachers to the state summer institutes for AP training. Do you feel that if we just were able to provide more training to teachers with those higher level teaching skills, and we did a stronger emphasis of providing AP at earlier grades before a lot of these entrenched attitudes take hold, do you think that that might be a strategy for us to move forward as a state?
Dr. Rasmussen.
My answer will be twofold. Yes, I'm always in favor of more teacher training because as educators, we're the first ones to know when we don't know anything. Like, wow, I really got to find out about this. I've been to several of the AP trainings myself. I found them to be very good. But, and they have enhanced my entire teaching, not just my AP class. But the AP Summer Institutes focus generally on the subject matter, as they should. When I think of any weaknesses in teachers, and then when I look at my own weaknesses, it's not subject matter. I think I'm pretty darn good at knowing my chemistry, knowing my physics, knowing my biology. And anything I don't know, I will make sure I will learn. It's about conveying that, checking for understanding. What can I do to get through to somebody who's not making that connection? How else can I explain this thing? So it's not good enough that I get it. It's got to be good enough that everybody gets it. And I don't know that an AP program provides that. I think that mainly working with an experienced teachers helps. How do you do this? How do I? And that's how I was raised. When I first started teaching, there were a group of women, and I had never seen this before in my life. A group of three African American women science teachers in my school. I had never seen that in my life. And they basically raised me. This is what you need to do. This is what you have got to do. How do you know? Well, they didn't do their work. Are you sure? Is it because of them or is that because of you? And they got in my face all the time. And I check me all the time. And I'm so grateful to them. They're all retired now. And I'm alone. I'm all alone. I'm having abandonment issues without them. But they constantly were in my face checking my teaching. They knew that if there was anything I didn't understand or didn't know about the subject matter, I would take care of that myself.
We have time for one more question. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said something that really intrigued me, and that was kids are lacking study skills. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is actually across the board. I don't think that is just of a certain group of people. And so the question is, do you know where do kids get good study skills? If you know, and I know that parents are supposed to teach it, but obviously if they don't have it, it's lacking. It's not working the best that we would like it to. So where do kids learn those study skills, and what is actually effective in teaching them? And let me just give one of my little biases. I heard you know, everybody is so impressed with you, and so am I, but I heard you say something that made me think, and that was that you were in athletics. And I tend to think that it is things like sports, band, those co-curriculars that create this cause and effect. You work hard, you know, you get some results. You feel successful, you feel pride. And so just speak to that a little bit.
Okay. Dr. Rasmussen.
I'll speak to the study skills first. I teach them in my class. This is how you, I mean, really, to high school kids, we're going to take notes now. Piece of paper, yeah. Take your note. The holes go on the left, okay? Things like that. You will put your name, and I'm very, very prescriptive. And the kids, you know, first they think I'm ridiculous. And that's the word that they use. They're like, oh my God, she's ridiculous. Yeah, I am. Ridiculous. You will put your name in the upper right-hand corner, followed by the period, followed by your partners who you're working with, followed by the lab station you are at, followed by the due date. Those five things in that order. If it is missing, minus 10. Oh, they just put their name, any kind of way, minus 10. Okay? Just very prescriptive and consistent. And they don't even argue anymore. It's just minus 10. They, the study skills. We use some AVID techniques. We use Cornell note-taking because kids, I mean, kids are good. If you tell them to take notes, they'll take notes. Do they ever look at them again? No. You have to force them. So they'll come back and ask me, what am I supposed, where are your notes? Well, I get them out for a lab. Well, what does your procedure say? That's what you were supposed to do. Okay, study. And I force that, and I have them rely on their notes. They want to rely on me. No. Rely on your notes and your look at. Well, I didn't know. You never said that. Look at your notes. There it is, right there, in your own handwriting. Okay, forcing them to go back at all times, prescribing them. You need to be studying industry standard 10 minutes per grade level per evening. Okay, so if you are not studying a ninth grader, if you're not studying 90 minutes a night, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Okay, so turn off the TV, turn off the Nintendo, turn it off. 90 minutes, these prescribed things. Speaking to parents, are you providing a quiet study area for your child? Don't let them, they think they're getting their homework done with the TV blasting and their texting, but their book is open as if the knowledge is going to fly out of the book into their head. No, it has to, and that's on the parents. Okay, so we talk, and I ask the parents, please check your child's work. You don't have to worry about, well, I don't know anything about it. Don't worry about it. My two kids brought home stuff that I didn't know anything about. European history, just can't help you, okay? But let me see your writing. Let me see your score. Bring me your graded things. Yeah, I know what a 72% means. It means you need to work harder, okay? Things like that. So the study skills were if they go from class to class to class where everyone's expecting the same thing, then it just becomes part of the air they breathe. So that's my say about that. As for the athletics, huge, huge believer in athletics. I coach two sports at the school where I am. Softball's just going to be starting. We have our big informational meeting tomorrow. And the kids are excited. And in my school, it's different because I know in some schools they're very competitive and you have to try out and it's very cutthroat and this and this. No, I'm happy. Anybody that wants to play plays. Okay, and we take them from zero. Okay, we're not winning any state championships in softball, so just so you know, we're not. But my specialty is bringing them from zero to proficient. Zero to proficient. Kids that have never played. You'll see Hmong girls who don't typically play sports. I snatch them up. I'm like, you Hmong girls need to represent. Get up in here. Get up. I don't know how to play. It doesn't matter. Come on. Well, what if I don't know anything? Then you'll be in good company. Nobody knows nothing. Come on. Come on. And that builds, that fosters that team spirit, that hard work, that cross-cultural conversation that they might not otherwise have. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So, yes, I totally agree. Sports, band, choir, anything like that that would get kids to just love school more. Definitely.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted the committee to know that not only is Dr. Rasmussen tough as nails and passionate, she's also a Millikan Award winner, putting her in the elite corps of teachers nationally. And as to Representative Demmer's request that she come back every couple of weeks, this is being recorded. I'll bring the popcorn, you bring the beer. I'd rather have her in the classroom with the Minneapolis kids.
Representative Demmer, you're just taking Mr. Dabney's time on his bill.
So. Absolutely. Representative, so go ahead. I'm with you, but can we trade off on the popcorn and beer?
Sure.
Okay, I'm with you.
Dr. Rasmussen, thank you very much for being here. You're a true hero in our classrooms, and we thank you for your time here. Members, there are they will stick around, so if there's any questions that you have, we would definitely like to give you that opportunity to address that. In passing here, Representative Dabney, excuse me, is going to come forward. Representative Beiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment for members. I would just caution us to be careful in drawing definite conclusions about curriculum and content over the grades just on the basis of this report. I think we'd need to hear from those who have developed our science standards, our science professionals in the state, and give them an opportunity to respond to some of the implicit conclusions in this. Well, but particularly on eighth grade earth science, we have placed earth science at eighth grade for a reason, and there's a long history there, and earth science can be have a physics and math and chemistry focus. So I think we just would need to have some response from, you know, the standards people on this.
Great. We are going to move on to House File 2360, Representative Dabney's bill. Before we do that, Representative Swales, would you mind moving the minutes of the February 9th?
Yes, here? Mr. Chair, I so move the minutes from February 9th.
Any discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 9th are approved. Representative Dabney, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to move that House File 2360 be approved, recommended to pass, and re-referred to the committee with a really long name.
Representative Dabney does move House File 2360 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations with a further recommendation that it be re-referred to the Local Government Division.
There you go.
All right.
Mr. Chair, there is an amendment, the H-2360A3 amendment. Members, this is largely technical in nature. The term reapportionment is used throughout the bill. I've learned that reapportionment refers to the allotment of U.S. congressional seats amongst the states. Everything else below that is redistricting, when we draw the lines for different jurisdictions. So this corrects that and tightens up a little language on the effective date at Ms. Larson's recommendation. It's not substantive. It is structural in nature. I'd move the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And Representative Dana, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In 2006, this legislature passed legislation allowing the city of Minneapolis, or the school district of Minneapolis, to change the structure of its governance from a 7-member board, all elected large, to a board that is identical to the way we elect our independently elected park board in Minneapolis. That is a 9-member board, 3 members elected at large, 6 elected by district. That proposal was approved by the voters in the 2008 election on a 2-to-1 basis and is having its first implementation in the 2010 election, when 3 district seats will be elected to the board along with 2 at-large seats. The issue in House File 2360 is, looking forward, there's no provision in either city charter or state law for the school board to be present on the redistricting commission that draws the lines for the districts that school board members will now be running in. They haven't needed to be there because they are all elected at large. With the change that the voters approved, they now need to be present, or I would argue should be present at the table when the lines for school board districts are drawn, just as city council members are there when city ward boundaries are drawn, just as our independently elected park board members are present on the redistricting commission when those districts are formed. With me today, if members have questions, is both representatives from the Minneapolis Public Schools, as well as Susan Siegel, the Minneapolis city attorney.
We will open it up to questions from members. Representative Overmiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dabney, because I know you care deeply about local control, can you touch base on if this is a helps local control or takes away local control?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Obermueller. Two things. One, there is the amendment touched on the trigger of the school board acting for this to go into effect, number one. And number two, if we don't act and or the city doesn't act to change the charter, then the school board is absent when it comes to drawing the lines for representation on the school board. And I think that would be a real issue of local control or the absence thereof.
Any other questions? Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, do we really need legislation for this? Can't the City Charter Commission take care of this issue?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland. At this point, we're kind of taking a belt and suspenders approach. For the city charter to be changed, it requires either a unanimous vote by the city council or going to the voters in the fall. Those are being explored, particularly by Councilmember Gordon, who's the chair of the Elections Committee on the Minneapolis City Council. But we've been having conversation that at the current point, under current law, there's no place at the table. We want to assure that there is and that this is an appropriate strategy at this time.
Representative McFarland?
And as a follow-up, I'm just curious. I see that there's no Senate author yet. Is there any reason yet for that?
Representative Dabney.
I'll have to look into that. Thank you. I hadn't realized. I'll check with my senator. I believe I sent her the jackets.
Any other comments from members? All right. Representative Dabney renews his motion that House File 2360, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations with a further recommendation that be re-referred to the Local Government Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, members. We are actually adjourning 5 minutes ahead of schedule here, so plenty of time that if you'd like to talk to our testifiers that you have the right to. And have a great day. Meeting is adjourned. General.